Yeah, it's nice to share this meeting together. It's November 8th. It's your first meeting. It's going to be without Sherwin today. She's excused. And then we have some of the president's fellow from the Detective Assault Center, Fargo. Today, we're going to consider another portion of Central Valley under community supervision. I've got my staff to come and run through the high level parts of it. Online, we've got Greg Rosso, who's the current chair of the Criminal Justice Commission. We have Linda, it's a great staff from the Department of Health and Social Services, Behavioral Health. I got Stacey Connor, who's the head of Behavioral Health as well, and infants. We got Suzanne DeFeo, who's the Alaska Judicial Council, And I think then my staff, Tori Shine, who has a PowerPoint that will run through real quickly. This is the recommendations 12 through 18, basically, the main part of the commission's report. And I think if you have questions or if you need further explanation, or maybe we can have Mr. Rosso speak up. And I know Suzanne DeFeo has been deeply involved along the way as well. Any other comments or questions at this point before we go into this slide presentation? All right, let's do it. Mr. Sherwin, I'm so far director, but why don't you go ahead and take us through these slides and quickly and then we'll go there.
This is the chairman for the Sherwin Staff Center Fargo. Today we're going to be going through the community supervision recommendations. In a nutshell, these recommendations are really public and safety enhancements that are meant to really focus our limited resources on offenders that are most likely to recidivate and to take the best research of the day and apply it to the limited probation supervision. The swift and certain proportional sanctions or to reduce reserves. So, first, the commission recommended implementing graduated sanctions. First, just to paint a picture of the problems due here, some offenders are released from lives in prison for a term within 3 years. And while our recidivism rate has come down a little bit over the past decade, we are still getting a very poor public safety return for our dollar. And when the Criminal Justice Commission looked at these really high rates of return, they really turned to the research to see which strategies would be most effective to get this number down. And so, one strategy that came up consistently time over time is the use of certain professional sanctions when responding to technical violations. And so, when we're talking about a technical violation, we're not talking about new criminal conduct, we're talking about things for the most part. The rule violations, misusing a firearm or chasing an address with a firearm probation officer, things like alcohol and drug violations. And so, what the research consistently shows, the most effective way to change offender behavior was to use flips certain proportional sanctions. And to really focus the harshest punishments on the most severe conduct. So, to bring this research in practice, the commission recommended authorizing the DOC to use graduated sanctions and incentives, essentially non-incarceration options for the probation officer to swiftly respond to bad behavior. These are things that could be used like increased reporting rates, increased drug testing frequency, increased lower curfew. There are some tools that other states are using in order to respond to these that don't necessarily require incarceration. If you want to see the new section that's in the law, it's under this version, it's in section 80-91. One is the definition, and one is the authority to do that. So, just for those who follow through, those are doing real hard for section 20. So just to kind of summarize, this is really just a little tool that probation officers go about so they can report it to their staff. And next, the commission recommended gap the incarceration cap for technical violations of supervision. guessing what that is. He was coming in for a technical violation or some troublesome trends. First, we see within a commissioner to its technical violation, and oftentimes spent up to a month in prison prior to that violation being adjudicated. And of those, there are some things they spend an increasingly large amount of time in prison for that technical violation. Now, technical violators, they make up about one-fifth of our prison population. Again, this is not for the criminal conduct. This is for rule violations or alcohol violations. And right now, on average, the technical violator is spending 106 days in prison. This is really the only kind of conduct that the commission can identify, that we don't really have a maximum on. The maximum in the most sorts of criminal conduct. This is one area where the commission felt that there should be some really judicial discretion. Discretion is really going down to over a fifth of our prison population consists of these individuals. And so the commission recommended having a kind of a tier approach for the first revocation. The individual will spend up to 3 days in prison, second revocation up to 5 days, third up to 10 days, the fourth and subsequent could be up to the remainder of the suspended time. The commission did acknowledge that some technical violations are worse than others. For example, absconding for up to 30 days or not completing sex offender treatment. And so that type of conduct does not fall out of the definition of technical violation. The research, just in short, shows that the carrot can work better than the stick in some circumstances. And so the commission recommended the system where an incentive is used in order to maintain sustained compliance of the commission's information where for each 30 days of good behavior, each 30 days of not violating, will incur a 30-day reduction in the term of probation. That one, just for John Flagg, is a whole new subsection, which is subsection, which is section 62, that talks about what the completion of the sort of thing. Next, the commission recommended reducing the maximum length of probation terms and standardizing early discharge proceedings. We know that the average length of stay on community supervision has increased by 15% over the last decade. We know that if someone is doing too favorable probation, they're very likely to fail in the first 3 months and certainly the first year of probation. We have probation officer caseloads that are frankly out of control right now. The average caseload is over 51 across the state. And what the commission found is that a large proportion of people taking up this caseload space are low-risk individuals. And the commission, in an effort to really focus our limited separation resources on those most likely to make them, suggested a certain compliance credit in order to get those low-risk compliant individuals off these caseloads. But what it really allows probation officers to, rather than have their resources spread so thin where they're not supervising anyone well, able to kind of laser focus their supervision resources on the ones that we know are having the effect of pushing up our sales and ways of pushing up our priorities. Another research principle the commission was relying on was simply to front-load probation resources. The data shows that because someone is most likely to offend in the first year of probation, it begs the question why are we supervising unnecessarily so many probationers in the second and third year? So if we can, again, lock into focus our existing resources from the most likely to offend, that will have the effect of front-loading probation resources if needed, and we also gave them a requirement to have a risk assessment tool that goes with that. It is a little more
exact than what you're doing right now.
That's true. So, chairman, the Board of Elections is now required to conduct risk needs assessment on every offender in the census areas along DOC facilities. So, so now we do know the risk levels of those that are coming on probation. Right. Okay. Okay. Reducing maximum lengths for probation terms and standardizing early discharge. on this slide, you can see the maximum probation term that the commission recommended. 5 years for felonies, and that's 3 for all other felony offenders. 2 for second count DUI and DV assault, and 1 year for all other misdemeanors. In the bill, the previous committee amended this section to raise those maximum probation terms. You can find that. In the bill on page section 6162 is the legacy term.
Yes, that is correct.
So you can see we raised the maximum term of probation for felony sex offenders to 10 years, all other felonies to 5 years, domestic violence crimes to 4 years, second DUI 2 years, and all other misdemeanors 1 year. So this is one area where we deviated from the commission's recommendation. Furthermore, on the early discharge side, for certain offenders, we reduced the minimum time needed to serve on probation prior to being eligible for early discharge. And the DOC would make a recommendation to discharge probation from probation if the offenders completed all treatment programs as in compliance with all supervised conditions. And this is another area where the Senate Safe Force Committee made some carve-outs sex offenders and sentenced. And classified felons are eligible for early discharge. The commission recommended extending good time eligibility to those serving sentences all the way to 21. And this is a fairly simple recommendation. Offenders in DOC facilities received good time. Offenders in high courthouses received good time. And this is simply to extend that incentive for good behavior to electronic monitoring. This is also kind of a common sense fix to a problem that we're seeing where some offenders would rather serve their time in CRC rather than on electronic monitoring to get that good time credit. But it's not necessarily a good use of the resources if this is a low risk individual that the DOC has deemed appropriate for electronic monitoring. And instead, they say before I think that's a house by house that much more expensive per day in the state. Just due to the fact that good time is an extended to electronic monitoring. I think the other thing, once again, is a risk assessment tool that probably be directed towards some kind of program or something that's not all incorporated. It could enter that condition still be one of the conditions could be that they get involved in a drug rehab or alcohol rehab program. That's correct, Mr. Chairman. The first recommended focusing ASAP resources to improve program effectiveness. ASAP was originally created and intended to be used to address the needs and issues of drunk drivers. So you have the acronym description. Alaska has Safe E Alcohol Program. Alcohol Safety Action Program, something like that. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The commission saw the ASAP's scope had been expanded over several decades, and while the legislature originally intended to just those driving related crimes with offenses that alcohol be referred to ASAP, now the courts refer all sorts of offenders to ASAP. Last year, only 57% of ASAP referrals were statutory mandated. DUI and by consuming alcohol. The remaining are not mandated by statute. The commission even saw that individuals with forfeited charges being referred to ASAP. And with this as guidance over the years, ASAP referrals have increased. Their budget hasn't really kept up with it. And now it's very difficult for ASAP to even do what its core original purpose was. And so the commission recommended limiting referrals to only those statutorily required. And this would enable ASAP to do more life screening, assessing and referring to group treatment.
But at this point, we haven't got that language drafted in the bill yet.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I should be able to see us with the committee's views on what's
opinion by this point. I'm going to throw on the table some of the agreements that we would begin with that we're able to see and ones that I'm thinking of. But they won't correspond with us. Yes, it will come in on Wednesday, but I think that we talk to the drafters, we can still use those, and we would just have to say they would be applied to that. But I want you to see some of the places where UCS takes some of these issues, and there were some technical changes, some grammatical issues. So we went through the list of the changes in that, and then there were some questions and amendments that we could use from both the main and the work program at that point. So I think that's the, I didn't want to get into that too far without the chairman not being here, so that's the best I think we can do to make sure there's a word of words on the table.
Mr. Chairman, the Commission recommended improving treatment offerings at CRCs and focusing the use of CRC resources designed to play resources of CRCs at community residential settings where we gain our own tap houses. The Commission found that CRCs are likely mixing low and high risk offenders. There's a well established research principle showing that it's bad to risk low and high risk offenders. And so one of the things that the Commission recommended was creating a prioritization as far as placements and after houses go to prevent that mixing. And also the Commission found that treatment is effective and that CRCs, if doing more treatment, you may receive better facilities and outcomes. And so the Commission recommended that we statutorily require after houses to be greater degree of target at any rural program. So in section 132, the purpose of the summary is described in one of the things they have at the end, and it's highlighted in the comprehensive treatment for substance abuse, cognitive behavioral disorders, and other criminal risk factors, including aftercare support, abuse, and so on. And so we have this point of view that says that's a statutory mandate, and then we give them authority to have regulations that will help them show up the rule of contracts that they get into. So I think that was one of the things we're trying to do is use those resources as wise as we can. So please continue. And that is the end of the slide, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you very much. Won't go away. So, yes, if I'm very next platform over from that, in any case, I'm going to suggest that we look at a couple of things in here that were outside of the recommendation. For example, limited birds licenses and limited license applications are things that I've been working on for the last couple of years that are going to be in this bill. I just want to stand to the public assistance you heard on testimony last week at FIRMA, and we can finish out the conversation on Wednesday. You'll see some language on mandatory management, mandatory program management, in the CS that I'm hoping that will be acceptable to you all. The community work, the work in which we and other pre-trial credits during 3 days, which will solve the problem of somebody coming to the day that they get sentenced and they've already served out their time in pre-trial, people delaying their court dates over and over again to get time served. So we're trying to say there's a benefit to those charged. We want that benefit to remain. But there's also a cost to the state, so the speedy trial question comes up in the disposition of the matter. So that's probably up for debate. And then some of the legal language that this bill will carry for victims' rights, for example, being notified by the court on probation, notified by the court on court dates, also a necessity to also testify. And I wanted members of the committee, if there's questions, I wanted to ask Cam Hughes, the chairman of the homelessness commission. So let me just go ahead and let you have time for a few minutes. Mr. Rizzo, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Very well, thank you for joining us. You see that we're moving through the various different categories. Are there some specific in this category, or are there some specific you are including on the record?
Well, I certainly am able to talk at the highest level about what the commission's recommendations are. You know, the committee will recall that we were asked by the legislature to find safe and effective ways of reducing the prison population. And again, we took an evidence-based look at how our resources are being used, in particularly in the area of community supervision. You know, we've got a number of problems, and we're using a vast amount of resources supervising low-risk offenders. 39% of the people being supervised on probation are low risk, and that takes a lot of resources that can be focused on people who are more likely to reoffend. The commission found that this population of post-prison supervision has spread in across many years rather than promptly towards the initial months after release, as the term explained. People are most likely to reoffend shortly after they get out of prison, and most likely need the most help and housing and employment and treatment. And all of those things are the components that we need to go to reinvestment. So the proposal basically is to focus our community supervision dollars where the evidence says they should be focused. Also, the way we punish noncompliance and incentivize compliance with impairments, we don't use a very effective system of incentivizing people to accomplish their probation. Research shows that the most effective punishments are sort of certainly proportional to this behavior. And we've got these types of systems in place in what's called the PACE program. These evidence-based punishments are used across the entire school system, and they are simply more effective than the way the old-fashioned way that probation was handled back when I was prosecuting and defending, and in many cases, the time of the day. There's one thing that's never been for a probation revocation process. In most cases, it can take, 6 to 8 months to resolve a probation revocation allegation for something as simple as breaking on probation. And if you have never seen any felony criminal judgment, you should also be aware that there are so many potential technical violations of probation in those judgments that having a strict and certain way to deal with a violation is really important, and it should be part of the law. In most felony probation conditions, there are up to 50 conditions that a probationer must follow, or else they essentially going back to prison. So, SB 31 was violated, drafted up in the policy recommendations of many. This matrix of graduated sanctions and incentives to strengthen community supervision was really an important part of it all. And we wanted to deal with technical violations at the level of seriousness that they actually were. Technical violations are not new crimes, and while it's important to be harsh enough so that you teach the lesson, they're not new crimes, they're technical violations, so caps on incarceration were recommended. Short revocation time periods in jail, 3 days in prison for the first time a person is revoked, 5 days for the second revocation, 10 days for the third with the committee's recommendations, the commission's recommendations. And we want to incentivize people that are on probation, reward them for doing well, and incentivize their probation officers. Because the faster the person can accomplish their conditions of probation, then the earlier they may be able to be completely released from their sentences. And so that system of standardization is really important. And finally, the the front end, our sources can certain sanctions. Those will allow us to have some money left over for reinvestment so that we can deal with the pervasive problem of homelessness, lack of behavioral treatment, and behavioral health treatment, and lack of addiction treatment that exists, particularly in rural Alaska, particularly for Alaska Natives, but also significantly in all of the cities in the state. So those are my comments for the community.
Thank you for making yourself available during this committee hearing. I also thank you to Suzanne Pietro, Jason Turner, and Linda. And then, President, could you please tell me about the committee hearing?
Thank you,
Mr.
President.
Thank
you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here and answering the questions. So, probably at this point, what I think I would do is I'm going to deal with the national forum, and really based on what we've heard from the public, what we've heard from people that gave input into this. So if I could get a phone for sure, only because I'm going to lay them out one by one. But if I start getting off on some of the details for you, just raise your hand. Welcome back on the respect the amendments. So, thank you very much. So, I'm not going to move the amendments. We're just going to discuss them as amendments. And as you said, we have the I version before us, and when the county amendments to the new version, the department has been working on it, and we'll go through that before we adopt it to show what is different than the I version. These are not drafted to amend the version except for one we have right in front of us. So, the 1.5 amendment is kind of what a lot of people call for, show me how you would do the reinvestment. And this one takes the recidivism and puts a reduction program together. Recidivism reduction program, it provides a vehicle for funding, it's going to be evidence-based, includes a qualified language to allow the crime victims who are domestic counsel or public counsel of domestic violence to go to a public address form from the counsel of domestic violence and sexual assault. And it's really one of the reasons that how we're going to do this. And this is one way. The other thing that I've done already along the way is we're already investing in pre-trial, we're investing in the state to pre-trial, we're investing in some of the things that we're doing by changing the way we do. Accountability for probation for all that's been assured. And this is one way of saying both for victims and for reinvestment for those who are coming out of jails. This is any vehicle. So it's part of the
argument. For the record, George Shawn, Senator Senator Daniel, that's exactly right. Justice reinvestment is all about rather than spending money on things that the research shows just simply doesn't work. Real good spend there to reinvest some of the savings into things that we don't do work. So really what this amendment does is it takes the recidivism reduction program, which the legislature created in Senate 64 a few years ago, and it focuses it for the purposes of reinvestment over the next few years. And also includes the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission in making recommendations to the legislature on how to best spend that. That's that money in a couple years. But also, Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, there's a $25 million bill that will serve as a vehicle for funding for Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. They would primarily like to focus their money on violence prevention programs that they've seen success on the last few years. And so this would be a vehicle for that.
And that's been from the conversation we've had all along the way with the House of Representatives and the Council on Domestic Violence. How do we keep tools available to keep turning the corner for those who live here? Because there's going to be some that will get out of jail, but there's some that will turn and how we use those tools properly. So, third question.
Line 17 actually uses evidence-based, so you're already targeting programs that have evidence-based track record that would be successful. Is there any other accountability measure that would be a part of this?
So evidence-based is defined on the next page. As far as other forms of accountability, my understanding is that this would be, this money would be available through a competitive grant process, and I'm not really an expert on how that works, but I would assume there's some accountability measures built into that process.
I'm not sure if that would be something that would be a good thing.
Moving forward, to ensure the laws is being done for full cause. The task force will also play a role in making recommendations to the legislature on how to best bring the best of this work in years to come. That language establishing the task force is part of the recommendation package, but it's not in the amended bill. I believe the committee will see that when the CS comes out on that too. Part of the big thing is this new process in this whole package.
And it's all these, and it would be even wise for us to move that forward without having somebody watching over and reporting back to us and starting to do that. Any other questions on the particular? Yes, see it in the substance of it. And the other one would be 1.7, that increases the mandatory minimum by 5 years for murder one and murder two. This is in section 67, I think, yeah, 67, and 68. And this is brought to us rather, I think, probably before I was forceful argument. But there's other people that brought it about the concurrency of some of our things. So this moves this one up. It's not as far as I can finish some of the people who wanted to go. It's probably something that's appropriate. And so I thought any question would be fine that would actually fix the identity, fix the crime. I thought this would be appropriate. And so we're going to forward based on some of that public testimony. Any questions on that here? So even the fact that that is 1.7, and then on this one was also brought to us by both corrections officers the last committee. They would like to see the full board have some conference with corrections officers, normal parole officers on parole. I think that's a totally wise thing. They get to know these prisoners in house, and this would be a good way to include very first hand knowledge of the individual when it comes to probation parole.
Can you just have a quick description of what the board is doing? Apparently, there is a corrections officer right now. So, just a little bit of the composition of the board and the status and things on this. I've got a lot to find on the phone. I believe it's a 5-member board. They're all confirmed by the legislature. Statutes does not have requirements that someone, for example, but in other words, there's not an executive suggestion specifically for a corrections officer. So I believe the eligibility requirements are a little bit loose. I believe that just has to be a representation of all the various judicial districts is the one requirement.
And this information, we can make sure that we have a probation parole person online. At this point, the closest I think we have to that would be Suzanne Vieto, who is the judicial counsel. Suzanne, do you have knowledge enough to answer it, or would you rather us get somebody from the court?
Mr. Chairman, we might also be able to just pull up the eligibility criteria that's in Title 33, Chapter 16, something like that.
Well, it's here.
Thank you. And you're bringing up to that, so we must be the spot where our bias is here. I can't hear you, Suzanne, so I'm going to do some aspect of just go ahead and excuse me at this point, and then we're bringing up the statute at this point. And do you want to read that, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a paraphrase. It's 33-16-02 model. There are 5 members of the board, all confirmed by the legislature. The only eligibility requirements I see is that the governor shall appoint at least 1 member who resides in the first judicial district, 1 who resides in the third, and 1 who resides in either the second or the fourth. So no explicit requirement for a corrections officer.
In my expectation on this one, and we might want to look at it, I don't know how correctly we will get to see you, but my expectation would be if there was a prisoner that came on a Lemon Creek, that it would be a Lemon Creek. Officer that would be consulted, that was coming out for his correctional facility, that would probably be somebody from there. The idea is to get first-hand knowledge of the individual probation parole. And so if we have to say that, quite frankly, we should, but I don't know that we need to. So maybe we'll get to the corrections officers, part of that, we'll have that conversation. So, so if the commissioner declines to on the meeting or just the most volume for all. Do we see the vision or possibility of that for a reason to speak for us?
I think probably I could get this part of the answer made, Mr. Chairman, can point around it out.
Right now, in order to get fully supplied, we are putting the conditioning or the everything that are available or eligible for full. That in parole board gets that notice that they're eligible. Not only are supposed to be out of case process, and you need to help me with a little bit of that process, but can you answer that question?
Yeah. To the chair, sir, we're asking our committee to increase the number of parole board hearings to some of the areas in the bill. I actually answered, but I didn't look into this would cost something, and I appreciate that. So that's something we should look into.
So that's another concept, and then 1.8, our investment plan is actually 1.9, centered around the discovery of 1.8. Could you say that the approach to monitoring the new criteria and what kind of information can be shared?
Could you be able to offer to this bill that there's going to be more data available than there ever was previously?
You could just put some of this action set, provide some of that data on the parole and potential programs you're after to do, share it with the department. Or the board. Tell you something. Consideration.
Yeah, okay. I think most of your work.
Thank you. Thank you. By the 1.9, we're kind of this is, you know, with the halfway houses, the CSAs, I'm sorry, this is a criminal pretrial. We'll talk about it. This time, we have a pretrial. We're going to have informal questions to make some electronic monitoring. If there are already electronic monitors going on in the private industry, and they do them for the most part third party, if I understand correctly. And there are good uses for that. So this just gives the department questions not only do we do, why do we do the electronic monitoring, but also says, in the interim context, to do that same supervision and use it under the 24/7 program, which is already going. But that way, we don't people usually need to say, you can go work with people in a variety of different ways. Can we make it that way?
Yes, sir.
Any questions on that? And then, so then the last one is a very simple one. The entire switching is from the initial total eligibility. And I can't remember exactly where this one came up. I think it was it O'Neill or was it the Council on Discipline?
Both Mr. Chair and both expressed concern that if you take this policy, and also some of our decision policies that there could be overlapping the two, there could be an issue where the decision to, for whatever reason, an IRA was printed up from the law enforcement website, the 0-2017 range, then that same individual would fall under the administrative parole provision allowing that individual to be released at the 1-4-5. So in other words, there's kind of an integrity between two recommendations. We can address that easily by just excluding the subpoenas from being eligible for administrative parole in the first place.
So those of you who have come to us, in line with all stakeholder groups, and we thought that those are some of the things that we felt that rose to the level that we would like to put in as amendments. And for me, as we go into the next round, what I'd like to do is either debate the amendments or help them go into the next version. And what we'll do from our office is, there's a draft version that's kind of a way that I'd like to the committee to move to the top. But before we do that, we'll go through what is different in that version from the other version we have before us right now. And I think that some of them, like say, have the exact provisions. In fact, that I think will be fairly straightforward. I don't think there's any big surprises in there. And some of it was, it's been a drafting challenge for our applicant. And every time there's a new amendment, it kind of has had a small impact on drafting. So I went over and apologized to them and thanked them. I got my media and went over and talked to the drafters the other day. And just so grateful. You've been able to work all over time. And this is one big bill that they got here, right? And so we have this committee. So, just here's the one for questions. So, thank you guys for joining us. Is there any other comments, questions for the committee? I don't have anything else to show to you.
Since Jesse is online, could we just ask him for his reaction to what was presented today and just to get overview of that? I don't know how far you want to go into any of the amendments, but it would be nice if he's online to hear from him.
Mr. Chairman, if I can add, Jeff Jesse also has considerable thoughts on our investment, so if you want to talk about that.
Well, thank you, Senator, for inviting us to step down to the Chief Executive Officer of U.S. Federal Transit Board. I appreciate the committee's looking at these amendments and seeking if they would improve the bill. As you mentioned, I'm particularly interested in the reinvestment aspect of the bill, which I feel are really essential to this effort being successful. If we're going to release more people pre-trial, the availability of pre-trial supervision is going to be essential to not only help them to be successful in the community, information on the access services that your department for you to serve, where they're able to get access to housing, employment services, and support for their recovery. So I think this is kind of a huge step forward in the funding of our entire criminal justice system. The reinvestment of that funding are equally viable and essential. I look forward to continuing to work with the committee.
We do have a 10-year table chart of progress online and to the Life of Force 5. So, Dan, this is your opportunity to touch on if you like.
Thank you. and employers who are part of our participants, the center is able to place all those who submit to the program and who do their part in a partnership agreement to receive a handout, not a handout. Time is essential to putting people on a pathway towards becoming constructive and helpful members of the community. For example, the center will spend up to $3,000 to put the young man in our kids' studio and have him as an advice and evolving door. As a result, the state avoids at least $100,000 it would otherwise have to spend to rearrest crimes of incarcerating young men for new crime. Plus, mortgages are spared and the policy is paid for. That's a risk of return on investment. It is the intent of partnership programs to work proactively with industry, nonprofits, and other cross communities to offer systems and procedures that could be adopted to deliver resources in their communities. We have already been working with Tacoma and Gillingham, and we plan to work with other communities so there can be a number of good contracts reentry funds to allow Alaska, where the benefits of justice reinvestment can be spread more widely. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for the opportunity and for your testimony, and thank you for your continued work on reinvesting in people. So, I really appreciate it. I just want to note for the record that Glenn Sam has been here the whole time, and my message for questions as well. So, if there's any questions for Glenn at this point, he's here. That's going to be a good one. I don't have any reason to keep the committee here at this point. My suggestion is that we go over these amendments and I'm going to be again. If there's anything you would like to see in the bill or even from the bill, try to make the committee being aware of it by Wednesday. I'm hoping to convince the committee to do the next week, take a vote on the bill. So if there's questions you want to bring about even the substance of the bill, or something you want to debate, I would ask that we try to get that on Wednesday. And if we have to go over in Friday, Section 31, that is a fifth degree, that's 6 grams or less. That looks like that's possession of cocaine. I can get with you and know there's something that I'm after that. There is a spice charge in the field. But I don't understand what happens under a fifth degree. It looks like it's been possession of cocaine.
We're talking about the commercial delivery or distribution size of our deal. Spice is considering a 3 and 7 grams of
Class B felony, so it was the generic graphic and Class C felony, on the simple possession side, and sections of the bills, very well complex in terms of how to read it. Most of the repealings on the back of the bill reflect sections of the same industry that there is really going to be repealed. The possession of space, position of home drives that it was built in Class A, most of them are a special term out for space to accommodate for being a Class B machine. So that's the one exception to possession of Class B and a machine or space being machine. Yeah, I'm sure I'm sharing it. I know this whole thing might sort of match my Anchorage ordinance. How close is that? Sorry, Jackie, through the chair, I don't know exactly how to describe it. Anchorage Street Space. I know that they've recently changed the way that they're doing it. I reached out to the municipal prosecutor over the weekend, so I did ask her to reach out to Madam Chair Clayton in her office.
Thank you for your participation. I will now.